The Cabins, written by Stephen Gratian, produced, recorded and edited by Saoirse McKenzie, narrated by Stephen Gratian. Chapter 1. They Ruin Our Game. My name's Keith Raymond Higgins. When I grow up, I call myself Keith Kelly. Kelly is my mum's family name. 1952. I'm playing cricket with my younger brothers and other kids from our street. Mum and Dad are on the front porch watching us play. We live in North Sydney, 132 Mount Street. Mum starts crying when the nuns come. Dad hugs Mum. My little sister hugs Mum's leg. It all happens at once. The priest walks up. He points to a cop car coming down the street. The cops pull up and block our cricket pitch. We stop playing. I'm batting. I shout, "Wicket leave," so I'm not out when I leave the crease. I'm 8 years old. My little brothers are 6 and 4. Mum waves her hand for us to come over. The priest and nuns creep behind Mum and Dad. A Bedford tray truck pulls up behind the cop car. My mother's been crying a lot. She's got dark circles around her eyes. She whispers to us, "Pack your bags, boys. You're going on a bit of a holiday." The nuns chuck our bags into the truck cabin. Me and my two brothers climb onto the tray behind the red cabin. I move a sack of potatoes to one side so my brothers, Daryl and Laurie, have something to lean on so they don't fall over the side of the truck. Me mates sit on the fruit box we were using as a wicket. One of them is spinning the cricket bat. Like when you decide who bats and who bowls. Before the bat drops to the ground, you call smooth side up or rough side up. The tennis ball we're using for a cricket ball bounces down the gutter towards the truck. We've used it so much there's hardly any white fur left on it. It has bare patches, like the skin on the local dog. We found the ball at the local tennis courts before the owner knew he'd lost it. As we drive off, I see my sister. She's getting in a car with my auntie. She gives us a wave. It's the last time I've seen my sister for 40 years. A couple of hours later, we get off the track at the Sisters of St. Joseph's Home for Boys, Kincumber. There's about 70 other boys there. We're put into the bottom dormitory. Mum and Dad come up to visit us once. Dad's not happy we were taken away, but the nuns kept knocking on our door, putting pressure on them. Dad isn't Catholic. "Mum, I want to come home. I'll be good. I promise I will." She says, "We can't take you home just now. Sorry, darling. I'm ill." Chapter 2. Rough Side Up. We're supposed to be at St. Joseph's for 2 months. I spend 4 years there. Sister Thelma gives us beatings. She uses a strap on our legs and bottoms. Sometimes we have to take down our pants. We don't have underwear at the orphanage. Sister Thelma also uses a cricket bat to beat us. Rough side up. Maybe 6 months after Mum and Dad visit us, I'm not quite sure, I'm hiding in a cupboard. A nun finds me and drags me out. She says, "Your mother is dead, get used to it. The government will look after you now, except that your mum has died." But I can't. One time Dad visits the orphanage and tells them, "I want to take the boys home for the holidays." The nuns say, "Mr. Higgins, your Church of England, the boys are Catholic. We don't see you sending the boys to church." We end up not going with Dad. I'm always hungry. I get permission to go to the toilet, but I go to the kitchen and stuff my face with food. A nun catches me. "Did you get permission from Father Crabb?" "Yes, sister, I did." "Did you?" "No, sister, I didn't." "Get out, you fucking little bastard. If I see you up here again, I'll kick your fucking ass. Now piss off." I never knew a nun would swear like that. It shocks me. Sister Alexis. I don't know what Mary MacKillop would think. They raise money for St. Joseph's Orphanage in the name of St. Mary. There's a cemetery at the orphanage. 1899 is the earliest grave I can find. Philip O'Brien, aged 15 years. There are other graves, 4-year-olds, 7 and 9-year-old boys, but mainly teenagers. The most recent death is a year ago, April 1955. William Lagarde, aged 14 years. Will is no longer alive. Chapter 3, Goan Dingo. 1956, I turn 12. Dad takes me home to Sydney. It's going all right, except I get into a bit of strife. I'm sent to Mittagong Farm Home for Boys. I end up in over 20 orphanages, boys' homes and jails. Mittagong is the second. There are a lot of beatings from the officers. They do a psychological report. Keith is a quiet, rather serious little boy who lacks the normal spontaneity and lightheartedness of the normal boy of his age. He still shows, even 3 years after her death, quite a strong attachment to and dependence on his mother. He has few really constructive influences in his life at present, and therefore has some difficulty in adjusting to the world after so long in sheltered institutional life. I decide I'm going dingo. The window only opens so much, but I can crawl through. I'm the runt in the Higgins litter. On the outskirts of Mittagong, I see a taxi parked on the side of the road. I open the cab door and find £15 before the taxi driver knows he's lost it. It's a lot of money. I walk down to the highway. There's a semi-trailer parked on the side of the road. I climb on the back, lie down and go to sleep. Next morning, the truckie starts up, drives about a mile down the road and stops. He checks me out. Come on, son. Down. What's happening? I'm running away from my stepdad. I'm going to Sydney. He says, well, get in the front. He knows I've come from Mittagong Boys' Home. My sand shoes have a big number one on them. He drops me off in Sydney. Just be careful. Yeah, I'll be careful. I walk to this abandoned house next to my cousin's place, Little Alfred Street. I see a manhole open. I climb up in the roof. A mate makes a rope ladder for me, and that's where I live for a couple of weeks. I do break and enters to get money and food, and I have a little bit of freedom. I play with the friends from the neighbourhood. They keep quiet about where I am. I'm getting to know people and mixing a lot better. 1957. I am 13 years old and free. I didn't see it coming. The next thing that happens to me. Chapter 4, The Last Time. To cut a long story short, I'm arrested trying to chop open a safe, charged with 22 break and enters. Dad tries to help me in court. It's the last time I've seen Dad alive. I'm sent to Mount Penang Training Centre, Gosford. I'm the second youngest there, the second longest sentence, 2 years. If you play up at Mount Penang, you get sent up north to Tamworth Institution for Boys. In July, Dad passes away. They take me to Dad's funeral under escort. The nuns at St. Joseph's won't let Daryl and Laurie come to Dad's funeral because it's a Protestant funeral. After the funeral, an officer escorts me to Central Station, but I sneak off. 3 hours later, I'm grabbed by a man who calls the police. That would have been my fifth escape. They debate whether to send me to Tamworth. They decide I'm too young. Back to Gosford. I'm forced to be silent at all times, stand at all times in the presence of officers, and eat half rations. This is too much. and it goes on for too long. I smash a dormitory window and dive through. I take off running barefoot from Gosford. I cross the hill to the mountain. Gone dingo. I follow the railway line to Woi Woi. I find some civvy clothes on a washing line before the owner knows he's lost them and put them on. I get on a train to Sydney and I go to a guy in Redfern. He helps me out a little bit. I know his name. I'm not telling. Later, through my own stupidity, I get caught, charged with stealing a car at Parramatta. The other guy gets away. They ask me, what's his name? I answer, I don't have a clue. Well, they do me no favours anyway, even if I tell them his name. So I don't say. Chapter 5, The Cabins. I convince the cops I'm 18 years old. They send me to Parramatta Jail. Back in court, they say, we did a check. You're an escapee from Mount Penang. 1961, 16 years old, nearly 17. Sent to Tamworth Institution for Boys. All my birthdays come at once. My worst birthday. Put on a train to Tamworth, guarded by two ex-army officers. We get there about 6 in the morning. Tamworth, place of confinement, built in 1879 with warm local brick and handsome stone dressings, a practical and flexible design for a country jail. Tamworth Institution for Boys opened in 1947. For the reception, detention, maintenance, discipline, education and training of children and young persons. Tamworth locals call it the cabins, as if it's some kind of holiday camp. The prison boss asks my name. I reply, Keith Higgins. He smacks me in the mouth. You say sir here. He kicks me in the nuts. I bend over in pain. Moving without permission. He hits me again. More kicks. It goes on for 5 minutes. The Tamworth boss is Superintendent Guilford. You are going to find out what it's like at Tamworth. You will not talk to another inmate. You will not look at another inmate. At all times you will remain 6 feet away from another inmate. We will bend you and we will break you. I'm escorted to the dining room. I look at my meal and think, oh God, where's the rest of it? 3 spoonfuls of porridge, 1 slice of bread, 1/2 cup of tea or coffee. Can't tell. If you look around, they put a cardboard box on your head. The box has pinholes so you can just see your food. You have to shovel the food into your mouth inside the box. The box stays on your head day and night until it rots and falls apart. 3 daily sheets of paper to wipe your ass. If you ask for more, you're wasting it. And you lose 3/4 of your meals. Officers come into my cell. One says, give us a head job and I'll look after you. I say, no. He pushes me against the wall. He's up against me, so I push him back. He lets rip and kicks the living daylights out of me. He yells, you're gonna suffer from now on. And I do. I'm dragged into solitary confinement cell. Every time you do solitary, you get an extra 2 weeks added to your time in Tamworth. In the solitary, I have to rub a steel bar called Dolly on a metal grill in the cell door all day. You get kicked if they hear you stop. Guards also make inmates dig a hole the size of a grave. You have to lie down in the hole while inmates fill it with dirt. If you move without permission, you miss a meal. They test who can stay under the dirt the longest, like staring death in the face. I'm so desperate to get out of Tamworth, I consider killing another inmate, so I'll be sent to an adult prison. At Tamworth, torture is the rule. The punishments are barbaric. They make a sport out of being cruel. Chapter 6, School for Murder. 15 convicted for murder and manslaughter, even more convicted of rapes and other crimes, at least 90 murders, including unsolved ones, over 20 life sentences. Hundreds of years of prison sentences are linked to boys who did time in Mount Penang and Tamworth. Kevin Crump, Billy Munday, Scott Simpson, Ray Denning, Greg McCarthy, Eric Rick DeVries, George Crime Lord Freeman, Archie Mad Dog McCafferty, Peter Grim Reader Schneiders, John Nano the Magician Regan, he could make people vanish without a trace, Lenny Arthur Mr. Big McPherson, Danny Untouchable Landini, Jimmy Whiskey A Go Go Finch, and Arthur Stanley Nettie Smith. You can't do to kids what they did to us at Tamworth and expect us to come out the other end as normal. We went in as boys and came out as animals. 2004. Forgotten Australians Report. Tamworth was built in 1881 as a colonial prison for adults. It is arguable boys who were transferred there between 1947 and 1981 were unlawfully detained. Tamworth's purpose was for punishment and deterrence. It was a very tough life, probably more harsh than adult jails. Punishment consisted of solitary confinement and meal deprivation, a system characterised by punishment of the slightest infringement of rule and permanent observation. Chapter 7. The List. I make a list of all the places I spend time on holiday. Sisters of St. Joseph's Boys Orphanage, Mittagong Boys Home, Yasma Boys Shelter, Mount Penang Boys Home Gosford, Albion Street Holding Shelter, Surrey Hills, Tamworth Institution for Boys, The Cabins, Long Bay Jail, Cooma Prison, Parramatta Jail, Goulburn Jail, Cessnock Jail, Maitland Jail, Grafton Jail, Bathurst Jail, Woodford Jail, Numimbar Valley Prison Farm, Wacol Prison, Boggo Road Jail. Tamworth is officially shut down in 1989 after a spate of suicides back then. So now instead of torturing boys, it's an adult prison again. Chapter 8. Like the Wind. I am Keith Raymond Kelly, son of John Henry Higgins and Josephine Gladys Kelly. I'm 8 years old when the Catholic Church removes me from my parents. Pack your bags, boys. You're going on a bit of a holiday. An unforgettable holiday. I spent 19 years, 5 months and 6 days in prisons and institutions, the equivalent of a life sentence. Tamworth created a whole generation of Australia's most violent criminals and notorious killers. It takes away our childhood. It takes away our trust in society. It takes away our love. It takes away, I suppose in some cases, our fear. A bloke called Sparks once wrote, "Love is like the wind. You can't see it, but you can feel it." I felt nothing for years, and I got no help from praying. There was no fucking wind in Tamworth. I'm just saying.